This is Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. Sands Hall spent 10 years of her life in the world of Scientology. Her memoir about those years was published last year and was quite well received. Publishers Weekly named it a best book in religion and spirituality. The book became a finalist for the Northern California Book Award in Creative Nonfiction, and it was long listed for the Golden Poppy Award, too. The memoir then was titled Flunk Start. It has just been released in paperback, though, with a new title and a new book cover. Sands Hall will be at Beers Books in Sacramento Wednesday, November 20th at 6 p.m. for a book signing event. She stopped by here for a conversation last week, and I asked her to explain the change in the book's title. It turns out, like the book itself, to have been quite a journey.
It's a perfect word, Beth. It started really when I was working on an early draft. And I think many writers understand that you don't always come up with a title right away because the title helps sort of pop open what the book is actually about. When I first finished the book and felt that it was ready to be sent off to my agent, I titled it Pilgrimage, My Trek Through Scientology and the Tale of a Brother. And I knew even then that probably I had written two books. It was very long. I'm not even going to tell you the page count. And when my agent came back and said, I think this is a bit long, I got back into it again. And although the thing was very much an intention to honor my brother, who had been a huge element in my life, and one of the things I discovered in writing the book, an enormous reason that I kind of spun into Scientology. He suffered a terrible, terrible accident, and I think the vertigo following his accident helped me move. So all of that was embodied in this early draft. Then when I sort of rewrote it, I just simply called it Pilgrimage, which is where your beautiful word journey comes in, because it made a lot of sense to me, even though I think that title's a bit vague and even insipid, because I'd been teaching this myth and fairy tale class, and I'd become extremely aware, again, of the whole concept of a hero's journey. So pilgrimage made sense to me. But that title wasn't very grabby, and I think it was, again, that sense a title really helps shape a book. So I pulled it back in one more time to look at it again and realized there was a phrase I used often in the book, this idea of flunk start. When you are training in a Scientology course room, you are often training to do drills of some sort, something that you're going to carry into life or practice of Scientology. And when you are doing those activities, you sit with a partner, and one of you is the coach and one of you is the student. And if you don't do it right, according to the little doctrine laid out by L. Ron Hubbard, you say, flunk. And then you say, start. And it's not meant in any kind of slap on the hand way. It's just do it again, do it better. And I've often thought of Samuel Beckett's phrase. He's a playwright. He would say, fail again, fail better. And that was sort of that concept of not fail, but rather do it again until you get it right.
So you were also truly putting Scientology out there by naming a book Flunk Start. You're announcing to the world, to anyone who knows these teachings, that this is what you're talking about.
You're absolutely right. And that got pushback from my friends who I had been estranged from when I left the Scientology community, then had become friends with again because there'd been this long period of time where I wasn't saying anything against the church. I was simply out of the church and they felt it was okay to be in touch. But when they heard I was titling my book Flunk Start with the subtitle Reclaiming My Decade Lost in Scientology, I received a letter saying, you know, we can't talk to you anymore. You're cutting the line to us, was the exact phrase. And I said, well, I'm not, but I understand why you feel you need to. So it came out, and what I realized is Flunk Start had a lot to do with what the book itself was about. This idea of joining something and then finding that it was the wrong thing, doing something that you'd rather not do or that you need to step away from and start again.
So Flunk Start was the literal title of the exercise and a cue to the teachings of Scientology, but you're saying it was also a metaphor.
Yes.
For what was happening
exactly.
For you and in your life during
it
this
wasn't
time.
An exercise in Scientology, but it was something that was used in
a
all
practice.
Exercises.
Okay.
Yes, when you were practicing. And so, yes, it became a wonderful metaphor. And in fact, in talking about the book to people, one of the things that really touched me is when I was finally able to say out loud what I was actually writing about, because I was still so mortified by having been caught in this cult for those 7 years and then the three it took before I was sure I wouldn't again return. I had this sense so many people would say, oh, I know, I spent 4 years with this guy, or I know I went to this ashram in India, or I know I can hardly believe this almost decade I spent with OxyContin just like ruling my life. Or so many people have a flunk. And so many people have figured out how to start again. Or I received these letters, Beth, of people saying, thank you for letting me see how to start, how to reclaim those years that I felt were lost, which there's no greater pleasure for a writer, I can tell you, than that sense of having people look at their lives because of what you've written.
And yet, the paperback's out now, and it doesn't say Flunk Start on the cover.
No. Speaking of a journey, last October, a year ago, my beloved editor at Counterpoint, Jenny Alton, called, and I'll just quickly say, she had been the one to fight for Flunk Start as the title, with Reclaiming My Decade Lost in Scientology as the subtitle, against the booksellers who were saying, like, I'm not sure this book is going to sell with this title. And she said, it's the only title for this book. So when she called me last October and said, we need to rename it, I sat down in my chair and went, I'm listening, because it's Jenny. And although we'd gone into a second printing in the hardback and we were doing very well, she said, there's a misunderstanding. Is it a self-help book? Is it actually telling the story that we want it to tell? So they pushed back actually the coming out of the paperback by almost 6 months, because they redesigned the cover, which I think is spectacularly beautiful and really tells its own story now. And it's now simply called Reclaiming My Decade Lost in Scientology.
So the subtitle of the hardcover became the title. Incidentally, the image on the front is this series of wine-colored frames that take you inward and more inward and more inward.
It's
so
a
that
very
in itself
powerful
is a
cover.
Message.
Yeah, it's like Mark Rothko meets, you know, O'Keefe. It's a very, very potent cover.
How do you explain Scientology now to people? And has that changed for you as you see and read more memoirs and revelations from other ex-Scientologists?
Great question. Because when I first published the book, I was, I think, really, really trying to be as kind as I could, both to the friends who remain in it, and even to some degree, one of the great gifts of writing the book was finding compassion for the person, me, that went down that particular rabbit hole. And I think there's a tenderness in the book. There's an effort to say, here is how a sane, reasonable, rational person might be sucked into this situation. I try to take the reader with me on that journey, and I think I succeed with that. But as the months have gone by, I have become much more adamant. Like somebody at a reading once said, you keep referring to it as the church, the church. And is it a church? And that really was interesting to me, because I want to honor those people for whom it is a religion and it is a church. But I also don't want to pull the punch on saying, in my mind, it is truly has the characteristics of a cult. And that I've become much, much clearer about, curiously, as the months have unfolded.
What do you understand now that maybe you didn't at the time, even as you were writing the book?
One of the biggest things was not understanding how much the terrible accident that my brother suffered and the resultant brain damage, and not knowing that man anymore that had been such a model to me in my life, model and someone I reacted against too. I think we do that with siblings. I hadn't understood how enormous an influence that had been. One of the things, Scientology is tremendously orderly, and I think that's hugely appealing. And so that gave me compassion for the person that I became, but also a sense of growing sense of, as one character in the book says to younger me, you're doing exactly what you should be doing, which is exploring spiritual paths and intellectual ideas, which was, it didn't occur to me then, but in the memory of it, what a blessing to say to somebody, to a 29, 31-year-old, whatever I was. It was huge. And that's been helpful, too, to just have compassion to that younger self.
Earlier, you referred to vertigo, and you didn't literally mean vertigo. You meant the life vertigo that you were experiencing in what was happening to your brother, and that Scientology gave you order and structure and helped right you or balance you.
It helped a lot. That orderliness was really appealing. I just had a student write to me, a young woman, say that she had just gone into the New York City org, as they call the organization, and it was really intriguing and interesting, and would I be willing to talk to her about it? And I was just basically, watch out, because they ask those questions of one, like, what is wrong? What's tilting you off? We can make it right. And it's incredibly appealing. And it stays appealing. I will, as long as I stay inside of this structure, my life will be orderly. But life isn't, Beth. Life is full of doubts and scary times and uncertainties. And no matter what structure you're inside of, that is true.
I'm talking with Sans Hall, author of the memoir with the title Reclaiming My Decade Lost in Scientology. Sans will be at Beers Books at 915 S Street in Sacramento on Wednesday. That's November 20th. She'll be there at 6 p.m. You'll be playing music, too. And there's a piece of this story and that original title, Pilgrimage, that connects to a song you recorded on your Rustler's Moon CD.
Yes. I remember when I began to write that, I understood, Beth, that a pilgrimage is a thing that has a beginning, middle, and an end. And that in finishing the memoir, I had come to the end of a particular pilgrimage. And of course, I think we take many, 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 many pilgrimages in our lives. Mm-hmm. Joseph Campbell has beautifully said, talking about a hero's journey, he thinks a well-lived life is one hero's journey after another. Mm-hmm. It's a quote I just love, because we do. We descend into those dark places of uncertainty. We hopefully grasp something that we learn in that darkness, and we return to live a different and more informed and more enlightened, perhaps, life that we would not have that if we hadn't undergone that darkness. So I had a sense of, oh, there is a season to a pilgrimage, and that is what began that song.
It's been a pilgrimage season. We have been finding our way. Now the curve of the hill starts to look familiar. How could that be? Where in the world are
a song titled Pilgrimage Season by Sans Hall from her Rustler's Moon CD from 2014. What was the timing of the song and the book?
I had stopped playing my music a great deal during my years in Scientology. I had been kind of this groping along singer-songwriter. I fancied myself in the Judy Collins, Joan Baez, Joni Mitchell range. You can sort of get my world by hearing those three. But in Scientology, my first sweetie there was a jazz musician, and he pretty much said, that isn't music, that folk stuff, jazz is music. And little by little, I found reason to stop really writing. Mm-hmm. Then I met this other man that kind of kept me engaged, bless his heart, but he's a good guy. And he was a little more encouraging, but still, I stopped really writing and playing much music Every now and then a song would emerge. But what happened as I was finishing up what became the final draft, I realized it was almost that proverbial devil at my tail or a wolf napping at my heels. It was like, I've got to record my songs. I have postponed this for 25 years, getting my music out into the world. What have you been thinking? And it was like, I did that CD so quickly. It was in days. And then, of course, you had to mix and master and all that. And I had wonderful, wonderful people working on it with me. But it was this strange compulsion to get it out into the world and to have those beautiful musicians honoring Pilgrimage Season in that particular way. And there's a reason it ends the sort of arc of the album, is that we have been finding our way. And now I've returned to the place I started, is one of the last lyrics. How can this be? I'm back where I started, but with this knowledge.
So there's more music ahead now.
Mm-hmm.
What are you working on?
I'm so excited, and thank you for asking. I have put together officially my first band, although I've played with Randy McCain often and also my friend Maggie McCaig often. I have them in an actual band along with a percussionist, Kit Bailey, and a fantastic bass player located here in Sacramento, Jerry Pineda. And we're working towards a gig on December 29th up in the Miners Foundry in Nevada City. And from there, we'll be going into the studio for what will be my second album. I'm very excited.
So this is an afternoon event, New Songs for Midwinter. It's the concert at Nevada City. Again, December 29th, we'll post some information, 3 to 5:30. Have you entirely left your Scientology years behind? Is there any way in writing that you might stay connected to that era of your life?
I am surprised sometimes when something comes up to write about. I just published an essay called Light a Candle, which is about this moment when I actually really stopped singing. I didn't even remember till I was working on the memoir. And that, bless their hearts, the Los Angeles Review of Books published that essay along with a link to that particular song. And I am sometimes curious. I think I've tamped down thinking, well, I've done that. But every now and then something does come up. And I've, with the launch of the paperback, been fortunate enough to be doing a number of radio interviews. And often the questions, such as the ones that you just asked, will actually spur something. And I'll think, now that's interesting. Have you actually finished, not mining exactly, but exploring what that decade, speaking of decades, was in your life?
Hold it up for all to see. Spark a flame around the world to burn towards being free. Light a candle, light a candle to burn towards being free. Light a candle for free.
Sands Hall, and that song Light a Candle is also from the Rustler's Moon CD. Her memoir is now in paperback. It's titled Reclaiming My Decade Lost in Scientology. Sands will be at Beers Books in Midtown Sacramento this Wednesday at 6 p.m. And her concert that you heard her refer to is at Miners Foundry in Nevada City on December 29th. You can find these details and more at capradio.org/insight. And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. During the next 3 days of public hearings from Washington, we will be producing new shows. You can find them online at capradio.org/insight. You can also hear us at 7 p.m., or you can subscribe to our Insight podcast. Thanks for joining us. This is Insight on Cap Radio.
Light a candle, light a candle to burn towards being free. Light a candle for freedom to burn eternally. To burn eternally.
Amen.